Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com/CBSSports and use the offer code FUN, F-U-N. Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Roll Podcast, and we host Zach Harper. Guest today, Ethan Sherwood Strauss, our resident religion and basketball expert. How's it going?
That is my official title. It is going well. It is going godly, and there has been good basketball. So on both fronts, we're doing pretty well, Zach.
It's biblical, I would say.
Oh, it's raining threes.
Yeah. No, that's prophetic of you to say.
Oh man, I can't keep up with you, man. You beat me right there.
I do make puns for a living. Not for a living. I don't get paid to do it, but I try to get paid to do it.
It's part of the overall package.
It's part of the charm, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. You somehow, man, this is part of how you're sneaky, Zach. This is how I don't know how you've done it, where you can be a jerk but you're likable. Not only that, you've embraced the bad pun to where you can just have fun on Twitter doing it, and if anybody else does it, they're kicked off of Twitter immediately.
I sent that to a couple of friends, that quote you had, and I said, yeah, basically said that I end up being likable while being a huge jerk, and my friends are like, yeah, that's pretty much what you are. So that was good that they confirmed that for you.
Yeah. Well, it's a gift. It's a gift. You should embrace it. You should cherish it. You are incorrigible, Zach Harper, and it works out for you.
You know what works out for me? The news and notes segment sponsored by Squarespace.com.
Boom. That was nicely done.
That was some good hype manning. No delay.
That's some energy. Yeah. Warriors Palace intrigue has filled me with energy.
And that's our news and notes report that Mark Jackson has forced a reassignment of assistant coach, or I guess now former assistant coach, Brian Scalabrine to the D League in Santa Cruz.
Yes.
What is going on there?
It's very Soviet Union, isn't it?
It is very Soviet. Like the Lawrence Frank, Jason Kidd thing seemed like playful in a way, mm-hmm. but now the second time around, it just seems so Iron Curtain.
Yeah, before we had the D-League, there was just nowhere to be reassigned, and now we have a place that you can be banished to. We have a Siberia that you can be banished to where you'll never be heard from again. It's a new dynamic in the NBA.
Is Brian Scalabrine the highest paid coach in the D-League?
I would have to look into that, check with sources. Not entirely sure on that. You know, I'm also thinking, it's just an odd circumstance, because if somebody does wrong, don't you fire them? So you have to wonder, why is he being banished to somewhere within the organization? It would seem to be, as Wojnarowski has said, that management has Scalabrine's, you know, he is supported by management, so there's a soft landing place for him. And then you got to think, what is he? Is he like Napoleon and Elba? Is there going to be a time where Scalabrine comes back when there's a power vacuum? What's going on?
Timely reference.
Yeah, it's topical.
That was, what, 250 years ago? that's just a great, great reference.
By
you. Yeah, that's how you rub the kids in, not with the Pokemons and stuff like that. I don't even know if Pokemon's still cool. I know basketball Twitter likes Pokemon, but I literally don't really know what it is. I thought it was a card game, but apparently it's a cartoon or a movie or a video game. I don't understand it.
Yes, I don't know what a Pikachu is. I know it rhymes with Waterloo, which... This might be Mark Jackson's Waterloo, Zach.
Wow, look at you.
This might be his ego coming to bite him, because really, it seems like with a lot of players and with a lot of personalities and power, your greatest strength is your greatest weakness. And Jackson is a very, very confident guy and wants to assert himself, and perhaps he goes too far here, and that's what happened.
I can only assume that him beating Steph Curry in a shooting contest in Indianapolis, what was that, 2 weeks ago?
Mm-hmm.
That had to have been the beginning of the end.
That's just him, swag overload?
Yeah, it was just swag overload, and they just, at that point, his circuits got a little fried. And he's
thinking a bit longer than how this all went down. It's not, it was funny if it was just apropos of nothing that Scalabrine got fired. It was, I'm a knockdown shooter, you're fired. He was just feeling himself.
I think it is weird. So for those that didn't read the Woj piece, Mark Jackson hasn't exactly gotten a vote of confidence from the owners, right? Like they're not firing him, but he's also the most successful coach they've had in maybe 20 years. I mean, I guess it depends on how you judge what Nelly did in those two really successful years that he had in 07 and 08. But Mark Jackson's, I guess, okay, you could say one of the most successful coaches they've had in 20, 25 years. And yet he's not being offered a contract extension, right?
Yeah, he's getting a vote of, like, Mr. Burns or Dr. Evil. Hey, can you stand over there a few paces to the left, a few paces to the right, as the you're looking for the trap door. He has not gotten a contract extension, as you've noted, and he wants one, and that's interesting.
He's through next season, right?
Yes, he's through next season because pretty much almost no NBA coach is a lame duck and has no contract extended at the end of a season. You usually have a year. So, and it's at the salary, I believe, or his initial deal was extended, basically. He didn't get a new one. So it's pretty surprising considering the success, the turnaround, that he doesn't have that level of trust from management. And today in my article on the situation, I brought up some of the swirling issues around it, how he doesn't have that trust from management, but the team is wholly behind him. And there's this bizarre religious dynamic that I do believe comes into play. I didn't get to touch on all of that in the article. But Jackson is so unique, and he brings a lot of good things and a lot of things that might be difficult to deal with attached to his personality, his outsized personality.
I found that there are a lot of fans, and you kind of speak to this in the article a little bit, where there are a lot of fans where I get the notion that they're angry at how religious Mark Jackson is. And I'm not even just talking Warriors fans. I'm just talking basketball fans in general.
Definitely.
Like, there are some people that will throw around the word zealot, and like which has kind of a negative connotation, I would say. And they just seem angry at how reverential he is to poorly use that. It's kind of weird that he does skew to maybe a more to an older audience, but the NBA is all about the younger audience, who as you noted is more secular.
Yeah, I think this is an issue. This is baggage that other coaches do not bring with them. And what's so complicated about it is that is perhaps a negative. When Mark Jackson is asked about Jason Collins and he said something about believing in certain things that are right from wrong and that he'll pray for his family, that does not play well out here.
Yeah.
That does not play well out here. And you have to be nervous if you're the Lakers, who are not Christian, by the way, that if situations like that come up, you might have a controversy on your hands. So I think that's an issue. But there's this other positive aspect to it, and actually not even a positive aspect, but just pragmatic aspect, where the hyper-religiosity of Jackson would seem to help the Warriors acquire certain talents, where Jermaine O'Neal comes over here for a decent contract, and then Andre Iguodala comes over here, and Iguodala says that he had built this relationship up with Steph Curry, going to chapel with him and Durant, prior to coming here, and that the team culture was a huge consideration. So we're faced with this bizarre circumstance where this is the least religious area out here in the Bay Area, and the religion doesn't play well with fans, but it might give you a competitive advantage when it comes to signing players. And is that worth the trade-off?
But is it enough of an issue with fans to where if this team was on pace to win 60 games, like, would anybody care?
No, but this is all about when it's all things being equal, where do people side? Where does the confirmation bias lead them? And if they really loved Jackson and if Jackson vibed with them, then the season might be seen as a success or at least meeting expectations. But because there's enough of that ill will, it goes the other way. I think at 60 wins, he would quell the doubters. But at
I love the idea that, like, they're 59 and what, 59-22 going to the final win of the season, the final game of the season, and the fans are just like, you better get to 60. If you don't get to 60, all this religious crap is going to come back to bite you.
Then everybody converts.
It's just, after fan appreciation night, just becomes baptism night.
Well, you know, sometimes it hasn't seemed as similar. I mean, there was the fellowship night after the loss to the Cavs where he's giving these evangelical sermons on the floor of the arena. And I believe that does make certain fans uncomfortable. And you've spoken to a certain anger, and it's an anger that I can understand because I don't believe in God. So I often wonder, where is the athlete who reflects my viewpoints? Where are these people? It seems like it's almost more acceptable to say, this is my faith, and I'm a believer in God, than to say, I don't really believe in anything.
Well, I think I could say that Paroantic is probably your athlete you're speaking of.
He looks like you worship Satan.
I just saw him last night. That was a gigantic fellow.
Oh, he's terrifying.
I don't know. Should that even be a concern, though? Like, I get what you're saying, and I don't disagree with it necessarily, but part of me also thinks, like, if you don't want to be immersed in the religious aspect of this coach and or maybe the culture he's cultivating with his team, you can just choose to ignore it. I mean, you could choose to ignore almost
anything. You know, you're talking about Mark Jackson, Zach. It's unignorable.
Absolutely. Why do you need to watch his press conference? Can't you just get the quotes and the stories after?
I wouldn't watch the press conferences if I was a fan of the Warriors.
I don't even like watching Wolves press conferences, and I'm in there.
Yeah, well, that's how I feel. I'm in there. I wouldn't want to watch it. I'm just waiting for the locker room time, which is more interesting because Bogut is saying whatever Bogut says or whatever pops into his head.
Do they do that thing in Golden State where they bring in fans, like season ticket holders and like special guests and stuff? One of them in Minnesota last night interrupted the press conference.
That's wonderful.
It was amazing. Somebody asked, because at one point Ricky Rubio took an elbow. He tried to take a charge and took an elbow to the mouth and had to come out of the game. And he needed like 15 stitches on the inside of his lip. And so somebody asked him about that, and Adelman started like making a joke about how, you know, that was really an offensive foul, even though it was called against Rubio. And as he's like going into like this funny quip about it, this fan, I guess a season ticket holder or some kind of special guest or something, this fan just goes, cold start to the first quarter. And Adelman's like Adelman's in mid-sentence. Like, there's no pause. He's in the middle of a word. And this guy just like goes, cold start to the first quarter again.
Oh, man.
And Adelman's like, what? And he just asks the guy, and the guy's always like, cold start to the first quarter again.
Love this guy. Where's this guy? We need to get him on the podcast, man, because it's not a circumstance that lends itself well to public speaking, and no. He just went for it.
And he just went for it, and Adelman immediately, like, he gives a quick, like, maybe, like, 8-word answer to that, and then the PR guy goes, all right, guys, thanks, and, like, ends the press conference.
Can we get this guy in a Popovich press conference?
Oh, my God. What if he's like the Baba Booey of the NBA or something?
We need more of this. With the Warriors, they did let fans in every now and again. And sometimes when the coach replied in a salty manner to a media member, they'd cheer. Like, yeah, you just got served.
That's weird. That's also a weird reaction.
It's a super weird reaction. I think it happened once with something Key Smart said to me, and I just wanted to stand up. His reply didn't even make sense.
I would love the idea that you start arguing with the fans cheering.
He said it with a certain inflection, but it was gibberish.
Are you sure?
He just cheered it.
Are you sure that it was fans and not David Lee?
I could see that happening. I could definitely see David Lee coming in and cheering my demise.
Back to the Warriors, though.
We should talk about the Scalabrine thing. The last time we saw Scalabrine before he was disappeared, to put it lightly, he was doing one of those in-game interviews that you see on the Comcast broadcast that the assistant coaches do. I don't know why they do this, but one assistant coach right around halftime, right when they start the third quarter, says a bunch of stuff. They're asked about, oh, we need to cut down turnovers, we need to do better. Mark Jackson doesn't let his assistant coaches talk to the media except for this. And so this was on Saturday. Scalabrine did not seem like a guy who was about to lose his job. And what was interesting about it is that he went in detail on the strategy, which you never see the coaches do.
Yeah, that's
rare. You never see it happen. And he starts talking about how they're trying to force the Spurs away from the middle and doing so by pressuring the ball with Klay Thompson. And it wasn't a big strategy reveal, but I do wonder if this was just a no-no or this was something that
– But that doesn't seem – I mean, that seems pretty obvious though, right? I mean, not like I'm not saying to the casual fan that's obvious, but – that's something most teams try to do.
Well, this goes back to, is it Mark Jackson's insecurity that's coming into play here? Because maybe the concern is not about giving something away. It's about seeming like you could be the coach to a certain segment of fans.
Right.
And that might be the concern. Because from Mark Jackson's perspective, we're talking about how his job is not safe. He has not gotten that extension, but the coaching market out there doesn't exactly threaten him. There isn't a great prospect out there, right? Phil Jackson is now linked up with the Knicks. Lionel Hollins clashed with new management and clashed with analytics, and the Warriors are big on analytics. Stan Van Gundy does not seem like he's leaving his area and may never coach again. And Jeff Van Gundy is great friends with Mark Jackson and won't stab him in the back. So if you're looking for a threat, if you're Mark Jackson, you got to kind of look internally as opposed to externally. And we're left to theorize and speculate with an absence of information, but I do wonder if that was part of this.
Yeah, that's a good point. Did you notice, as Woj noted in the article, did you notice a dissension between him and Michael Malone last year? I always want to call him Mike Malone, but I just can't do it. Michael Malone.
I didn't notice it specifically between him and Jackson, but one of the reasons why I haven't been big on the whole theory that, oh my God, the Warriors miss Mike Malone. They miss Mike Malone. That's why they're not doing well, is because he did seem a little distant from the team towards the end. So I just didn't perceive him as integral to what was happening, whereas it seemed like other guys, Darren Erman, who you make fun of me for.
Oh, your boy.
Mr. Erman.
Not that you talked about him. It's that that's the only name I heard out of your mouth in Summer League. In like 12 days of Summer League. That's
there was nothing else to talk about. I mean, really.
I heard Darren Erman is great and Draymond Green is fat.
I did not say
or
that.
Or no, you said he doesn't look as fat anymore.
Do not get me in trouble with Draymond, who did get angry at me in Summer League because I said that if he wasn't already on the team, he would be cut for this performance. Which was true. He was shooting some miserable percentages.
He was shooting like 18% or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but you know, this is part of why Draymond Green is good and why he's won the spot is because he's a vicious competitor.
Yeah.
And he's going to seize upon that and get really angry about that. You know, it's an insight into what's allowed him to succeed. But yeah, I don't want more Draymond Green problems. Come on, Zach. I don't want any of that.
No, that's all water under the bridge. I'm sure we've talked about that already.
Yeah. I talked it out with Draymond. I just said, hey. It, not awkward at all, you know. I believe you deserve to be on the team. I just think that you're playing so badly that you'd be cut if you weren't already on the team.
And I'm sure he took that into careful consideration.
Yes. It went swimmingly indeed. But what do you think about this thing where religion as a recruiting tool? How does that make you feel? Does that seem like that's on the up and up? Because what if you're Joe Lacob and you're thinking to yourself, you know, 2016, I know that Iguodala came here because he was friends with Jackson before it all, friends with Curry, the chapel, the religion. Kevin Durant went to chapel with them. He's also religious. Is it possible that firing Jackson means I don't get a shot at Kevin Durant in 2016? Or is it possible that keeping Jackson means I have a better shot? Should that be a consideration in all of this?
That's a weird dynamic.
Yes.
I don't know that I have an answer to that. Like, if you think that's what it's going to take to get Kevin Durant, I kind of feel like you don't really have a chance at Kevin Durant.
It could be true.
I have no problem if they're going to use religion as like a tactic to woo players. Like, yeah, go for it. However you got to woo players, that's within the collective bargaining agreement rules. Like, do that. That's what you should do. Your pitch should be whatever you think it is to legally convince them to sign with your team, right? Like this isn't the case, but let's say that there was a gigantic free agent center, up for grabs last summer, and let's say a certain area of the country that's maybe middle of the country and very south, like I don't know, somewhere in the Texas region.
Yeah, a place where they may or may not have candy paint, you know, possibly grills.
Right.
You know?
Let's just say that this alleged Texas city said, hey, Dwight, we know about your personal life. We've got quite the nightlife here. You could just ask our shooting guard, who is Instagramming pictures all the time of him enjoying this nightlife.
Yes.
Come sign with us.
Our shooting guard, who every time he throws his head back in a flop, a G-string falls out of his beard. Who shall rename? You know, he'll be nameless.
Right. Like if they said, "Look, you can come be about this life," mm-hmm. if you sign with us, and he said, all right, that's what sold me, like, why wouldn't you use that to your advantage?
Oh, that's a brilliant analogy, Zach. That's a brilliant analogy, the idea that the slim thug way of living was its own religion, and that was selling this this center of which you speak.
Right.
That's interesting.
Because also, like, all right, well, maybe he's just not that religious anymore, but Dwight Howard used to be super religious, and the Warriors tried to woo him.
Yes.
And that didn't work. So I don't know how much religion would play into that, but also I don't know how much...
It was a classic battle between Jesus and strippers. Could that be the title of this podcast?
Are strippers undefeated in that battle?
Oh, I'm sure they've taken one. Oh my God, there's so many Mark Jackson jokes that I should...
No. That's... But that is part of the story, right? That's part of the...
Yeah, that's part of the story. We don't talk about it. See, this is... People ask me, why are you the only one talking about this? A, I don't think I'm the only one talking about it. B, it's pretty touchy. It's all very touchy.
So what happened, like, 2006? He was in a sex scandal?
Well, that's when it was happening, but it was under wraps, and it came out later because she was trying to blackmail him.
Right. She was trying to extort money from him, right?
Yeah, she was trying to extort money, and it came out after the Warriors had hired Mark Jackson.
Right.
Which really, if you are of the belief that religion's not great and that religious people might be hypocritical sometimes, that fueled that. Plus, it was just good for a lot of easy jokes among Warriors fans on the Warriors World forums, on the Golden State of Mind. So the stripper incident with Jackson is part of the story. And so there's just a lot of the Jackson story that exists kind of beneath the surface in where fans talk about and on social media, but mainstream, we're not really discussing it.
I kind of think that, I mean, that wouldn't have affected his hiring because I'm sure they did all kinds of background checks, right?
This is
a new ownership group at the time, like relatively new ownership group who is trying to make a big splash. Like, I can't imagine they would leave very many stones unturned.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure if this comes up when you do a background check that somebody's being extorted. I believe now it's this.
You don't hire that Arby's private investigator and just have him walking around to random women, just going, "Have you tried to extort from Mark Jackson?" They say no, and he just says really 8 times until you crack. Like, that's not something that happens.
It might be, and this is a little dangerous as I'm talking extemporaneously about things that have happened in the past. I don't think they knew about it until Jackson came to them.
Interesting.
But I don't want to say that.
You're guessing, but you're not saying that it's fact.
Yeah, I don't want to get sued, you know. So
right.
Yeah, I'm already treading a line or two right now. I don't want to add to it. But
who says bloggers don't live dangerously?
I do. Sherwood might seem like my middle name, but it's actually Dangerously. Ethan Dangerously Strauss.
Dangerously Strauss would be a good podcast for you.
Oh, it sounds almost British, right?
Yeah, it
Dangerously.
Does.
You
it
know,
really
I can
does.
See a Jane Austen in a Jane Austen novel, somebody's last name being Dangerously.
Yeah.
Milton Dangerously. Yeah, I could see that. I could definitely see that. Little known fact, that was actually Sir Soccer's real name before he was knighted.
Good to know.
Good to know. So you don't see this as problematic at all, because I see it as it's not necessarily problematic right now, but say certain teammates feel excluded because they're not Christian and you have this intensely Christian culture. Don't you think that there could be a bit of an issue there?
I wouldn't say it's not problematic. Mm-hmm. I think it does have the potential to be problematic, but I don't think it's guaranteed that something bad would come of it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and we should probably move on from the religion, as we've talked enough about it. I think the bigger deal in all of this is that a certain religious point guard is backing Jackson emphatically, and I've noticed that how you react to that news is dependent on how you feel about Jackson. The people who want Jackson fired and hate Jackson go, what does it matter? What else is he supposed to say? You know, that doesn't matter. And the people who want Jackson to stay think it matters, and I happen to think it matters. And
I don't think it matters that much. I know, like, Curry clearly likes Jackson.
Yes.
I think if they replaced him, I don't think it makes Steph Curry walk when he becomes a free agent.
Well, and it seems like Curry is such a get along kind of guy that he would adjust to the situation.
Like, as long as they're winning and the Bay Area is still a place he enjoys living, I can't imagine that. Oh, you know what? We had too many problems with Mark Jackson and his ego. Like, we're gonna go a different direction. I can't imagine Curry would be like, well, then you're gonna have to trade me.
Well, yeah, and I but at the same time, you have to take his input into consideration.
Oh, certainly.
You don't want to upset your franchise guy. I just want to refute the suggestion that this is all put on by Curry, and Kyrie said it about Byron Scott, and these other players said it about this coach who got fired. No, Curry believes this. Curry likes Jackson, and he does not have to go this far for him. He could deflect. Silence says a lot in these situations. The silence that you're hearing right now from Joe Lacob and Bob Myers.
That's the fascinating part to me, is that they haven't commented on it.
Yeah, they haven't commented yet. That is some pretty deafening silence. And so it matters. Curry, when asked about all of this, could have easily said, those aren't my decisions. Whatever happens, happens. Jackson.
Yeah, he could have said, we're just focused on basketball, or, you know, some platitude like that.
He kept saying, I back Coach 100%. I love Coach. He used the L word with Mark Jackson. And so he not only that, he says that the whole locker room backs Jackson. So, no, Curry is going to bat for Jackson.
Right.
And the history of that is that if you're Curry, you have to love Mark Jackson. Keith Smart was terrible for Steph Curry prior to Jackson. He kept benching him whenever Curry had a few turnovers, as though that was some brilliant strategy for dealing with it. Like,
I have this question.
Obviously, he wants to turn the ball over. I have to keep putting him on timeout to fix it. Let's bring
in. I have a question about this, actually, because this seems to be an issue with Adelman and Rubio,
mm-hmm.
where Adelman sometimes just wants Rubio to just make the pass, make the play, like just get it done. And Rubio will put a little extra flair on it, some unnecessary flair. And if it ruins the play, if it's a turnover, if it, you know, ends up getting deflected out of bounds when it would have just been an easy play, like Adelman is visibly annoyed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is part of the reason that it has led to J.J. Barea getting fourth quarter minutes over Rubio, you know, 7 or 8 times this year.
He is the AC law in this situation.
Yeah, I think it's because, like, Adelman's trying to prove a point of, look, you need to play basketball, like, more intelligently. Like, the flash in the fourth quarter isn't necessary, and it's not necessary really in the first quarter. Like, you need to play better basketball. And so I do kind of wonder, like, when Raymond Felton played for Larry Brown in Charlotte,
oh my God! Like, what a tandem, by the way.
Yeah. That's a good buddy cop. But those are like, Larry Brown was really hard on Raymond Felton and like really shackled him as a point guard.
Mm-hmm.
And then I do believe that it drilled in these fundamentals and this style of play and this smarter play to where when he went to a freer system with the Knicks, that I mean that first year he was incredible. Like, Felton was really, really good, and I think there is part of that where you have learned this way of playing, and then when you're kind of allowed to spread your wings, all of that mixes together and to improve better play. So I'm not saying that necessarily benching Curry was the right move, but I do kind of get it, if that makes sense.
I understood why he did it, but just seeing it up close, he was signing his death certificate.
Sure. Yeah.
He was backing the wrong guy. He was all Monte all the time, and he was playing Monte huge minutes, and it was not very smart. And
well, I mean, Steph Curry have quite a bit, but Monte Ellis have it all.
Yes.
Are we still making those jokes? Do we still get to do those? I don't know.
It is one of the greatest quotes in the history of...
Especially because he's just, like, wistfully glaring, like, just fondly looking off into the distance of, like, just, like, enjoying the splendor that is Monte, as he says
it. The amazing thing is that Monte has a few of those, you know?
Yeah.
Monte have many a quote.
He does have many a quote.
There's the great clip too when Marcus Thompson's talking to him and he's typing and he's just doing one finger and you just have to see it. And then Marcus says, Monte, you don't have any idea what you're doing right now, do you? Oh man, where is Marcus? I need more Marcus takes in this situation.
Yeah. Well, you know who knows how to use a computer? Squarespace.com.
Oh man. Boom.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. You can easily create your own professional website or online portfolio because they're constantly improving their platform, new features, new designs, even better support than before. And they've got beautiful designs for you to start with. You could really stylize your website however you need it to make it pop for your business, for your personal website, whatever you want. It's going to be unique.
Make it pop.
It's also incredibly easy to use, but if you do want some help, the Squarespace support team, known as the Care Bear Layer in New York, has over 100 employees that are ready to help you out 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That covers the entire year.
The entire year.
Speaking of a year, if you sign up for a year, it's going to be $8 a month and includes a free domain name. It's really inexpensive and just a great bang for your buck.
Bang for your buck.
Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience, matches the overall style of your website, so your content's going to look great on every device, iPhone, iPad, Motorola, two-way pager, the one of those flip phones that the kids love. No matter how you look at it, it's going to look great. You can start a free trial with no credit card required. Start building your website today. If you decide to sign up for Squarespace, please go to squarespace.com/CBSSports. Enter the code FUN, the offer code F-U-N. You're going to get 10% off. Show your support for the Ion Basketball Podcast, which thanks Squarespace for their support of the podcast because it's everything you need to create an exceptional website.
Yeah, we are.
That was...
It wasn't really germane.
No, that wasn't at all. But I bet in the Silicon Valley, plenty of Squarespace has been used.
Oh, nicely done.
Yeah.
And yes, it is. It might not be the epicenter of religiosity, but it could be the epicenter for the perfect market space for Squarespace.
Absolutely. So where do the Warriors go from here? Are they going to just ride out the Mark Jackson contract and then go with your boy Darren Ermine or a new head coach?
I think they're playing for time. That's what I think. Where they don't trust Jackson, but at the same time, it's not as though they have a candidate they want. So.
They're going four corners. They're just running a little clock.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They're just running a little clock. They're seeing what comes up. So there's a lot of fire the coach when fans want to fire the coach, but there usually isn't, oh, and hire this coach, you know? So we're looking at it as Jackson needs to win X amount of playoff series in order to save his job. I don't think that's totally true. I think that a lot of it will be determined by who's out there, you know? If Stan Van Gundy says, hey, maybe I do want to move back to the Bay Area where I'm from, that could be a factor. If Thibodeau, something happens with him in the Bulls, and he's not in the Bulls anymore, that could be a factor. So a lot of this will be determined by what's on the outside as much as what is true internally.
I mean, that's probably the way to go. I do wonder if that could spoil the culture a little bit. Moving forward, like let's say the Warriors don't make it out of the first round this year,
yeah,
that's probably gonna be a problem, right?
That's Mark Jackson threat level. What is it? Threat level red.
Yeah,
that's how they, I think about it in terms of threat level, where you can still survive it, but it's gonna be tough.
Yeah, that's like a DEFCON 2.
I never knew how the DEFCON system worked.
One is the worst one.
Yeah, I wasn't really around during the Cold War.
Yeah, because I think when people go, oh, we're at DEFCON 5, like that's actually, I think, the best one you can be at. Well, I guess no DEFCON at all.
Yeah, there's probably so much confusion of that in the 80s. So many people freaking out because they think that they think we're all going to die. Like, no, that's actually, things are great right now. It's at the lowest level. The wall just came down. Chill out. You know, it's
right. That's probably exactly what happened.
Yeah. You know, it's but whatever DEFCON is really bad.
Yeah, that'll be Mark Jackson.
Yeah, he be at DEFCON retreat to your bomb shelter in the basement with Christopher Walken and Brendan Fraser. You know,
right.
on that DEFCON.
Wow, look at you with a Blast from the Past reference.
I know that's the last time. You know, it's sort of like how Brian Scalabrine was banished in my mind. That's when Brendan Fraser was banished. I don't think I ever heard from him again.
I wonder if Scal is a religious bro.
I don't
strike me as such, but you never know.
You never know. You never know. And I wish I'd asked. And maybe we'll find out in the future. He'll have more room to talk now. He's no longer an assistant coach of the Golden State Warriors.
Right. He's got plenty of free time.
Plenty of free time, and he's allowed to. He's allowed to speak.
And he can go to. He's in the D League now, where he can coach up Hilton Armstrong and mm-hmm. and any. Any Warriors
and the
siblings?
Other weird, yeah, the other weird Warriors issue. Is it just me? Am I just close to the issue, Zach? Or is this team really weird and interesting, despite not being that interesting to watch? You know, where the D-League affiliate has...
The D-League affiliate has...
Curry's brother and Klay Thompson's brother.
Has as many stories as the upper brother. The yeah. upper level.
I mean, it seems like it's going to head into some sort of Little Giant situation where Scalabrine, who's been fired by bully Mark Jackson, is going to lead the two brothers or the worst brothers to finally beat the Golden State Warriors in some big game for God knows what.
And I feel bad for Nedovic because he probably doesn't know which side he's on.
No, it'll be very, yeah, it's a new year in this country. It'll probably be a very confusing situation, you know, for old Nedovich there. I say he's got a good enough connection with Bogut that he could claim upper level. He could do it.
Yeah.
You know, with the whole Balkan connection.
So how do we feel about the organization, the season? What do we feel?
I think it's fun. You know, it's not my job in the
line. It's fun despite not being a fun team anymore.
Yeah, there's palace intrigue. There wasn't a palace before. That's cool, right? To have this Laker-esque or maybe even Knicks-esque swirling rumors about this and that. It didn't exist. Nobody cared. Now there's been some success. It's a big market. That's the subtext of all this, the subplot of all of this, is that new coach, new owner, new success, new superstar. So there's just a lot to sort out. We're not used to this out here.
Right, and it is finally, I guess this is a sign that we're recognizing that the Bay Area is a big market in the NBA,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that you get stories like this popping up. So I guess that's a coming-of-age situation for the Warriors, so congratulations.
It's, as Mark Jackson would call it, it's a bar mitzvah.
It is their bar mitzvah, exactly what he would use.
I believe that... I can't even do the imitation of Mark Jackson saying Jewish things.
We need to get John Krolik in here, who does a great Mark Jackson impersonation.
Oh yeah, far better than mine. He's incredible with it. We just need to give him a script of speaking at some bar mitzvah and saying extra Jewish things about the Warriors season and how they've come of age. Maybe it's more of a bris.
Yes, it is. Well,
no.
I guess that does that make Brian Scalabrine the no, I'm not going to say.
Okay, it's cool.
Where I'm going with that.
Yeah. It's okay. How do we feel about it? I think that if you're Jackson, you're in a place of anxiety and defensiveness. So that has the situation a roiling, and I believe it's tough for management because they don't quite know exactly what they want to do and how to handle this, because you don't want to lose the locker room. If you feel like Mark Jackson has a really good hold in this locker room, I believe that a lot of people, when they observe basketball and think in terms of coaching decisions, believe that it's just like a video game, that you install this new system suddenly and you start doing better and it's no longer the isolation heavy offense that Mark Jackson has and everything's great. No, these are human beings. You can potentially really screw up the dynamics and make everybody relearn, you know, and it seems like a lot of teams that have had success have had it because they've had continuity over the years. So it's no small thing to just change course right now. It's a big decision. And so I believe that there's probably anxiety on both sides. Anxiety on Jackson's side and anxiety on the side of Lacob and Myers.
Do you have any confidence about them going into the first round and winning the first round?
I believe it's possible. I wouldn't pick them to do it. I'd pick Houston to win that series. That seems to be the matchup they'll face. They might fall out of the playoffs just because the West is insane right
it
now.
It is. I mean, I would have said that's ridiculous, but Dallas, who is currently tied for eighth, but I guess technically ninth, mm-hmm. They're only two games back of the five seed.
It's ridiculous. It's just ridiculous. Those other teams won't go away. Phoenix with that, what do they have, a five-game win streak? It looked like they were going to be the team to fall out of this.
Yeah.
So, yes, it's possible. I think they'll make the playoffs, but it's possible they fall out. And then that would be, I mean, that would be just, Jackson would just have to pack his things. Not that he lives here. He lives in L.A., but he would just have to do it symbolically.
Is that part of the problem? Is he's not a local anymore?
I don't understand how he was able, after this scandal that he had, to convince his significant other that he would coach a team upstate, you know, away from there. But never mind. That's not touching that, but that's just thinking aloud. I don't believe that's really a concern. I don't think that's an issue. You know, he's here for the games. He travels with the team. I don't think where his residence is a big deal. I mean, Steph Curry used to live in Charlotte before buying a house out here. So, you know, it's no biggie.
Should we switch gears?
Yeah, sure. I've gotten myself into trouble so many different ways. We should have gear switched a while ago.
You want to talk about the Pacers and the Heat?
Yeah, definitely.
So Pacers beat the Heat.
Beat the Heat.
They beat the Heat by one. What was it? 85-84, 84-83, something like that. 84-83. Yeah. And
hot mess of a game.
Hot mess of a game. Some weird ejections, some non-ejections.
Some keep playing when you have that probable concussion. Just
flagrant fouls.
Just, yeah, really. Dwayne Wade shooting a three that was called out of bounds when he wasn't out of bounds.
Yeah. I mean, that's clearly just the league's going to go, whoops, sorry about that.
Whoopsie. Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. That, I mean, that won't affect anything. The LeBron elbow to Roy Hibbert's face, like, I missed the game because I was at a thrilling Timberwolves-Hawks game last night. So I missed it all. So I got some of the highlights, and I caught some of the a couple of stretches here and there. But for the most part, I still have to watch the game. And so I didn't see the Hibbert-LeBron collision until late. That was something where people took strong stances on either side of that.
Oh, it's all their own stupid baggage about LeBron. I mean, let's just—that's what you think it is. Yeah, if it's DeMar DeRozan doing that, nobody thinks it's intentional. The idea that LeBron jumped into the air and then did, and by the way, if you watch Miami Heat games, you've seen LeBron do that exact move a bunch of times where he swings his arms for a double for this clutch, you know, double clutch fading away layup. That was the exact move he was doing. It wasn't elbow the guy. You know, I've seen him do that so many times. So if you believe that that was intentional and he was actually trying to foul Roy Hibbert that way, you're saying one of a few things. Either you hate LeBron because a bunch of people hate LeBron, so you're just going to see the worst and whatever happens, you know? Or, frankly, and this might sound condescending, you just don't watch enough basketball to realize that's a move that happens a whole lot of the time. Now, I think the more interesting discussion is whether or not it's a foul and how that should be adjudicated, because I just think verticality puts refs in a tough position, right? You have – the block charge was the call that – people said that's really tough to know if it's a block or a charge. Right. Well, verticality, I think, is tough because the idea is that you go straight up. Nobody in the game jumps straight up. You're going to land a few inches either way or launch a few inches either way, and then there's contact in the air, so you're asking refs to somehow determine whether or not someone's trajectory is straight up as another guy is jumping into them in a midair collision. That's harder than block charge, in my opinion. So what happened there, I think, is that Roy Hibbert did the verticality as LeBron jumped towards him, and Roy Hibbert's momentum is going towards James, and James' elbow hits Hibbert's chin on the way up because he's making his ascent. And really what's happened is that verticality as this new development in the league over the last few years creates collisions, and then collisions are hard to adjudicate. And so we have a bunch of controversy over who's the blame for what. And I think it just raises interesting questions about whether or not this should be still a rule or how we should call it, because it creates contact and then it creates complications.
I don't mind things creating complications. Like, I think it absolutely should be a rule because there is something to it. I mean, verticality is something that if a guy's standing on the ground trying to take a charge, we're all for, right? That's a much easier thing to referee.
I don't love charges and I don't love verticality because I want guys to make a play on the ball. I don't like the idea of you just run in there and then you jump towards a guy as he's jumping towards the basket. I don't like it.
Yeah, but we're not talking about like John Elway getting hit in the Super Bowl and then helicoptering, right? Like, It's not that extreme. We're talking about guys that are jumping fairly straight up.
It's just the idea of not making a play on the ball and trading, trying to block a shot for trying to just be this obstacle. That's
defense. Like, you're supposed to be an obstacle, and if you try to block a shot, you're liable to definitely get the foul if you miss it, as opposed to trying to make the shot difficult for someone. Like, that's the whole, like, oh, he doesn't block a lot of shots, but he alters a ton of them. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the trade-off, is that you're altering the shot without getting the block.
And Hibbert's one of the best at challenging these shots while doing the verticality, because he's just that tall, and that's his value. So, and Hibbert's great, and it's just unfortunate for Hibbert that he got clocked like that, too. I mean,
I can't believe, like, he clearly was messed up.
Yeah. He should not have come back in the game like that. And that's on the Pacers. I understand why it happened. It was a heated matchup. So
I can't remember who tweeted out, but somebody tweeted out last night that Quinn Buckner told them he was talking to Hibbert after the game for like a post game thing, and Hibbert like talked or like stopped mid sentence at one point and just said like he was fuzzy.
Yeah, that's like not
that's
a good sign.
Yeah, that's not a good sign at all.
That's a pretty bad sign, and it's interesting. It's interesting because a lot of the criticism of LeBron James when going against the Pacers is that he wasn't driving, and so LeBron finally goes in and creates that contact, and finally Roy Hibbert is the worser for it. So I wonder principally about Roy Hibbert's health. You know, I somebody's brain, that's kind of important. But given if he's healthy going forward, I wonder if that will alter the way he does things and the way he does things against the Heat.
I doubt it would. Maybe if it happens a couple more times, it would, but I don't think he's the type of guy that's just going to be like, all right, I got hit, I'm going to stop doing this. Like, he knows what makes him successful.
Yeah, it'd be really hard for him to change his identity.
Yeah.
It's just, it must be difficult at some reflexive level if you get clocked like that to keep sticking your beak in there and jumping into the driver. I had never before thought about verticality's implications for the health of the big man. You know, I'd always thought about, this isn't great for the guy flying at the big guy. This is the first time I saw, yeah, it could kind of be an issue if you're the big guy and you're withstanding that contact.
Do you take anything away from the game? I always have a hard time with these regular season matchups because
yeah, and then people also do that thing at halftime of these games where they're so emotional over it that this is a good sign for this team that they're down by five and all this has happened. You know,
right.
I always think that people are speaking with their own confirmation biases. You just want a certain outcome to unfold.
Yeah, there's constant like, I mean, if the Timberwolves are down nine, they've played horrible the entire half. I'll think like, oh, it's not so bad. It's just because I want them to win.
I kind of think that you're encouraged if you're a Heat fan from that game.
It seemed to me like I didn't like again. I still got to watch a lot of it, but the stuff I saw, it just seemed like they were kind of playing back a little bit. Like I didn't get the sense that they were like doing a lot of the stuff they normally do or doing it all that hard. And I'm not trying to take away anything from the Pacers win because the Heat clearly tried to win that game, but there did seem to be a bit of a psychological thing going on.
Well,
and we've seen that from Spoelstra in the past.
The biggest thing for me was that they found an answer for Hibbert. I don't know if he's a long-term answer for Hibbert, but man, did he look like an answer. And that was Udonis Haslam, who is under 6'8" in socks. Somehow, Hibbert just ran roughshod over Greg Oden, and that was the big matchup we all anticipated. And it didn't even look like Oden was doing that bad a job. It was just Hibbert was doing so well.
He was just locked in. I mean, Hibbert probably knew that matchup was coming and just wanted to like say, I'm much better than this guy.
And then Haslam kind of ruined him.
Haslam's a tough guy, and it reminds me of that whole like when you could guard Dirk with a smaller guy, and
which Haslam did in the 2011 finals quite capably.
Yeah, and that's what the Warriors did with Steven Jackson and Dirk. Yeah. Like it's just kind of like, this guy is going to be really annoying to you, and he's going to be under you constantly.
And there was a hard foul that Haslam delivered at the beginning of guarding Roy Hibbert. And so I wonder if that played into it, that Haslam, he's a tough dude. And perhaps
he's kind of a scary guy, too.
Perhaps the violence or the implied violence does matter in a way that really can't be quantified by PER.
Yeah. You know?
And that's a factor. He also just did a great job of forcing Hibbert from his spots. And just the defensive performances in that game were something to behold. I was reminded of how Paul George does such a fantastic job not only getting through screens, but also just preventing his man from getting the ball passed to him, which is this aspect of defense that's super underrated and we don't talk about often. We one-on-one defense, isolation defense, that's what we'll focus on. That's huge, and George was just doing a great job of that in that game. So it got me excited for the series, but if I'm guessing as far as which team is the better takeaway from it, I would probably say the Heat.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I just have to watch more of it. I don't know that I have an opinion yet, but I guess it's good because I wonder if it's actually good for both teams, because not that the Pacers have locked up home court advantage in the East, but that game certainly kind of made it a thing, right?
Yeah, no, it helps massively, and that's a big deal. That's a big deal for them.
And then both teams can kind of just rest their guys a little bit.
The thing is, I'm not sure if either team is so good that they're just guaranteed to meet each other. You know, we don't.
Oh, come on! There's not a single team in the East that's going to challenge them.
I hate to say it, but the Raptors, you know?
No. The Raptors will be tough to dispatch, but if that series goes past six, I would be shocked.
Don't you think that Toronto it's going to be like Oracle in 2007, that it's such a rabid fan base and they have so little to cheer for that it's going to be crazy?
Look, I think DeMar DeRozan's had a fantastic season.
Yeah.
But he's not going to score on Lance Stephenson and Paul George efficiently.
I mean, I don't think he's going to, but the Pacers have this issue where their offense is bad. And Hibbert does well against the Heat, or at least did till Haslam came in there, so that rectified the situation a bit. But it might be an issue against another team and a more balanced team. The Raptors are pretty balanced. I believe they're top 10 in both categories, offensive and defensive.
Yeah, no, they're very good. They're just not not in the same class.
Well, look, all I'm saying is this. I would pick the Pacers. I would pick the Pacers to re-meet the Heat, and I would pick the Heat.
Can we make that the phrase? Re-meet the Heat?
Re-meet the Heat. Re-meet the Heat. Re-meet the Heat. It's such a weird chant.
Or you could chant reheat the meat, and now it becomes a nice dinner conversation.
Reheat the meat. yeah, no, I would pick that to happen. I'm just saying that it's not as guaranteed as it seemed like in the past, because both these teams have flaws and stumbled down the end, and some of the other Eastern teams got better. So it's just not guaranteed. One of them could get knocked off.
No.
Ah, you're just such a conventional wisdomer.
It's not conventional wisdom. It's just I look at these two teams and the rest of the East. So just they're not gonna. I mean, I really do think the Raptors will be tough. Like that's not an easy team to just beat. But that's not going seven games.
Yeah, and the Bulls also
The Bulls will be very annoying for either the Pacers or the Heat. But that'll also be like a really annoying five or six games.
I'll just be annoyed by the rhetoric surrounding the Bulls. That's where I'm at with them, where I admire them and I like them, but I hate the way they're talked about, where everything they do is more gritty and more heartfelt and more wonderful.
Everything with them is a
constant. They lost by 20, but oh man, it was the greatest 20-point defeat you ever saw.
Well, and everything is just like, everything's a consolation prize with them, right? Because they don't physically have the tools that they're supposed to compete.
Yeah, definitely.
So they can compete, but there's just a limit to it, and so unless it looks like they can surpass that previous limitation, like it's hard for me to take them seriously. I think they'll be in the second round, and I think they'll be
They got a shot at it. Where if there's some injuries, if something goes wrong, you know.
Yeah, I guess if Bosch gets hurt or if I don't know, David West gets hurt or something like that.
The way that Boston nearly made the finals in 2012 is what could happen for Chicago, just because they have such impressive continuity and these other teams out east, they haven't been to the show before. They haven't really been to the postseason. So I believe they have a shot at things.
Yeah, I believe they have a shot at...
Sources say Bulls have shot at things.
I believe they have a shot at being really tough to beat, but ultimately quite beatable.
Yeah, again, I wouldn't pick them. I wouldn't pick them to advance. I wouldn't pick them to beat the Pacers in a series, even though I want to see that series. I know that you and Matt talked about that, the idea of a strength-on-strength matchup. I would pick the Pacers. But they have a great chance at prevailing there, and then who knows what happens once it's a shorter – once you've shortened the postseason that way, you could make it out of there. God, that would be so weird. Imagine the Bulls in the finals. These Bulls.
No.
Yeah.
No, I'm just not going to imagine it. Like, I refuse.
It's so hard to imagine that I think it's not happening.
Right.
Oh, man, I'm losing my voice. We should probably wrap up.
Yeah, we could wrap up. I do recommend, like, if you did find a worldwide leader in sports website that had your article on it, I would recommend going and reading that. It's very good.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
You can read it on True Hoop. And, follow you on Twitter at Sherwood Strauss. Ethan, always a pleasure, my resident religious expert.
Thank you. It's hard to be a religious scholar, but I do my best.
Mazel tov.
L'chaim. Yeah, area.